custom-built homes to eco-friendly commercial buildings. On time, on budget, on Facebook, LinkedIn, and northbranch.net.
Support for The Exchange Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and here are some of the voices from this week's headlines.
It's not about me, nor is it about any other candidate. It's not about any political party. It's not about the Republicans, the Democrats. It's about saving the United States of America.
Isn't it time to address this dangerous problem of distracted driving? Isn't it time to prevent these unnecessary crashes and loss of life?
Thirteen of the largest non-governmental employers in the state of New Hampshire are nonprofits, 501c3 entities, and they do not pay one penny in business enterprise tax.
Everybody's going to be in a protected class, and then it'll be meaningless. We felt that this trivialized people who really have been discriminated against because of race, religion, etc.
You know what we love about Frozen is we're finding people are relating to the characters from any part of the world or what they're doing or any families, and that's been huge for us. And we certainly encourage and love all the different interpretations of our characters and what it means to people and inspires them. I mean, that's the greatest thing you could ever feel like you're doing as a filmmaker.
From the top, that was former New Hampshire U.S. Senator Bob Smith announcing his bid to regain his old seat. State Representative George Sykes, a Democrat, speaking in favor of a bill to ban handheld cell phone use while behind the wheel. GOP Representative David Hess on his proposal to tax the state's major nonprofits. Republican Joseph Hagan opposing a measure to expand protections against housing discrimination. And UNH alumna Jennifer Lee, co-director and screenwriter of the hit movie Frozen, which won an Oscar this week for Best Animated Feature Film. Again, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and let's get your thoughts about these stories and others we'll cover, including the state Senate vote just yesterday in favor of Medicaid expansion, otherwise known as the New Hampshire Health Protection Program. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, email exchange@nhpr.org, Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests for the roundup this week are Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader in New Hampshire Sunday News. Gary, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome, Laura.
Also with us, Bob Sanders, longtime reporter at New Hampshire Business Review. Bob, good to see you. Welcome.
Great to be here.
And also with us, as always, Dean Spiliota, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, thanks for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, Dean, I want to start with you. This big Medicaid vote in the state Senate approved 18-5, a pretty strong vote. Put this in the big picture, Dean, of where the 50 states are lining up in terms of expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act.
Right. And we've been talking about this issue for the better part of a year now. You know, it goes back to the Supreme Court decision upholding the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act. But the Supreme Court said that states have to be given the opportunity to decide whether to accept or decline the expansion of Medicaid. So, you know, where we are right now is 25 states have said yes and will be expanding their programs. 19 have said no, and New Hampshire was one of six left to decide. It now appears that that logjam here in the state has been broken. As we've mentioned, the Republican Senate voted 18-5 yesterday to approve this bipartisan compromise. Seven Republicans joined all the Democrats. Goes to the House. House is likely to approve it by the end of the month, and Governor Hassan is basically waiting to sign it. I think it is interesting. It's indicative of how controversial this is that Republicans are calling it the Health Care Protection Act rather than the Medicaid Expansion Act. It's a very ideologically charged issue. It folds into the larger polarizing debate about Obamacare. What's been interesting to me from a political perspective here is there's been a lot of criticism in the state of this by some Republican members of the Senate, like Andy Samborn, I think Frank Cataldo also voted against it, if I'm correct. They've been opposed to it, more of a Tea Party influence there. Some groups in the state have been very critical of Republicans in the Senate who support it. Some county GOP organizations have also come out against it. So, you know, the question for me is there going to be any sort of retaliation in the next election against some of these officials who supported it? That's kind of the implicit threat there. I don't know that they can actually deliver on that, but it has been interesting to see the pushback from Republicans in the state against this, because it now looks like it is going to pass. You know, Senate President Chuck Morris was on board. Jeb Bradley, Majority Leader, was on board.
Those are big names.
Big names, absolutely. So, you know, they're putting their credentials on the line. But again, we've been talking about this for over a year now at this point. We had that special session in the fall that didn't break the logjam, and now we have this compromise. You know, Republicans are getting a lot of what they want. They really are going to be getting, you know, essentially subsidizing either employer-based insurance or subsidizing low-income individuals to buy insurance on the private market rather than having a flat-out expansion. You know, the final thing here is that, you know, in 2016, the funding from the government's going to drop down to 90%. So there's going to be another whole debate about whether or not New Hampshire wants to pony up that 10%.
Yeah, and that's interesting, Gary. Can you talk a little bit more about some of the other differences? Dean highlighted some of them, but some of the other differences between the way New Hampshire's doing this and many other states which have just, you know, expanded traditional Medicaid.
Well, the key difference here is using private health insurance to provide the coverage instead of using a government program that's through the government, through a state agency like a Health and Human Services. So that's the key difference. The other difference is that we're sort of sunsetting it, another difference, at 3 years. And so it's going to take another act of the legislature if it goes beyond this three-year period. We're also using this program that exists in the state now but doesn't have very many people on it, which is called HIP, or Health Insurance Payment, Premium Payment Program, which basically the state or the Medicaid will pay the premium if you have private insurance through your employer. And that they expect to ramp up very quickly, maybe in a month or two after they get permission. They think they can do this with an amendment to the state's Medicaid plan rather than a waiver from the federal government.
Yeah, that's the other thing that's a little uncertain, right, Gary? Right. There's still sort of approvals of different kinds that we need from the feds.
The big waiver is for using the private insurance from 0 to 138% of the federal poverty level. There is another waiver to include substance abuse treatment in the program as well as mental health coverage.
Well, and that's a big deal given the heroin epidemic that we're facing here
absolutely
in northern New England. Real quick to you, Bob Sanders, please. How is the state's business community feeling about this Medicaid expansion plan?
Well, the BIA was definitely for it. It got, which rankled some conservatives.
The Business and Industry Association,
yes.
Yeah.
They just think that without this, there'll be some downshifting onto the private insurance payers and employers, basically they want us to take the federal money so that so companies don't have to pay it.
Gary, go ahead.
One of the things that Jeb Bradley was emphasizing yesterday when he was trying to sell it to the Senate was this is going to help business in this state. We're going to stop cost shifting all this money onto the private payers, whether they're seeing their premiums go up and up and up, because we're going to be these hospitals are going to start getting paid for the services that they provide.
Well, and I'm sure it's something we'll be following up on in the exchange as this thing rolls out. There's going to be a lot more to talk about. But I did want to ask all of you about another big bill before the legislature this week. And Gary, back to you. This was a so-called distracted driver bill. Now, this was over in the House. There was a vote in favor, but there was some confusion, Gary, over what this bill would do and would not do.
What this bill basically does, we could say it bans cell phones, which is a big deal for the state here because we've never voted for a cell phone ban before. But it also bans all handheld mobile devices. So in other words, it's not just cell phones, it's GPSs, it's, you know, things like that. We've had a ban on texting for several years here. But it does not ban the use of a cell phone in a car if you've got a Bluetooth, if it's hands-free, if it's integrated like some cars have phone systems. Same with the GPS. You can program your GPS at home, put it there on the top of your or on your windshield or whatever, and as long as you're not trying to program it while you're driving, you're perfectly fine. But if you are trying to manipulate these things while you're driving, then that's what is banned under this bill.
Well, and I wonder what our listeners think about this, because we've talked about this a lot on earlier shows. The number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Bob Sanders, what are some of the complications or questions that might come up out of this ban on handheld device use? You can't say just cell phone anymore. It's bigger than that.
Yeah, well, what happens, you're not supposed to be touching your GPS while you're on the road or even at a stop sign. I mean, what happens when you come to a detour, right, and you need to, you know, tell them how to get around? You have to press detour on the thing. If you see a policeman sitting right by, you're going to press it. So that I don't know. Of course, there's some enforcement, and it's pretty clear. But I think this is going to pass. I've heard people curse out people on cell phones. I mean, I know we have the live free and die thing, but I think there is so much resentment about people not paying attention to driving while they're chatting on the cell phone and nearly hitting somebody.
Well, and there have been a couple deaths from people, so that's just, you know, it's a terrible thing. But people do love to use their cell phones, Dean Spiliotis, while they're in the car. Some people have long commutes. I'm wondering what the pushback will be against this bill in the state Senate.
Well, you know, one of the arguments that opponents make is that we already have existed distracted driving rules on the books. But, you know, we've had law enforcement call into the show and say, you know, yes, you technically you can't text, but you can legally read a text. So you can still actually read texting. And police officers have said it's very difficult to tell what the person is doing with a phone. You pull them over, all they're going to do is say, oh, I was dialing a cell phone number. You know, there's some other complications with this. You can't use your phone at a stoplight. You can make a 911 or emergency call out, but you cannot take call. Let's say, you know, your child calls from school. Most of us would answer it immediately. That would not be allowed. Even if there was an emergency at school, you would need to pull the car over to the side. So I agree. There's been a tremendous outcry, and we've all seen this firsthand. It's very dangerous. So, you know, you're going to have to go to a plan B, Bluetooth, or maybe using the integrated system in your car. But yeah, it may very well pass.
All right. Well, coming up, we'll take your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. NHPR is trying to keep our upcoming fund drive as brief as possible, which is why on day one of the drive, we're planning to raise the entire day's goal in just 4 hours. Your donation now will count towards the tally and help us collect $10,000 in challenge money. Support the new service you love at nhpr.org. New Hampshire weather, sunny today, not as cool, with highs from mid to upper 30s, partly cloudy tonight, not as cold, low single numbers above zero in the North Country, ranging teens in southern parts of the state. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank, providing complete business banking services to small to medium-sized businesses in New Hampshire. Information at centrixbank.com. And from the Melanson Company of Keenan Bowe, with comprehensive roofing solutions for 80 years, adding solar to turn roofs into energy-producing assets. Melanson.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Join us as we look at some of the top stories of the week. We've just talked about the full Senate just yesterday approving Medicaid expansion, also known as the New Hampshire Health Protection Program. You can join us on that story. We're also talking about a bill in the House that was just approved to ban use of handheld cell phones and other devices. Hands-free would still be okay. The Senate has yet to weigh in on this. We'd like you to weigh in on this topic and the others that we'll cover. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Gary Reno, Bob Sanders, Dean Spiliotis, let's go to our listeners now. John's joining us from Laconia. Hi, John. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a quick comment. Besides the eye-to-hand coordination while dialing or manipulating handheld devices, specifically a telephone, the conversation itself definitely engages a lot of distraction. I've noticed it myself, whether you're giving somebody directions of where to find something or you're calling home to pick out a paper. Or, I mean, your mind is absolutely elsewhere, and that's that's the basic comment, and thanks for taking my
So, question. John, no big distinction that you're seeing between hands-free and handheld?
No, not really. I tell you the truth. When you glance down those seconds and the distance that you travel in the seconds, definitely imperative and significant. However, once you're in conversation and dialogue, you're quite engaged, in my personal opinion.
Okay. John, thanks for joining us. I want to let you and everybody else know that we will be following up on this story Thursday on The Exchange. So more on this particular bill and some of the issues and research surrounding distracted driving, especially the use of cell phones and other devices. We'll be following up on Thursday with that topic. Thanks for calling in this morning. I did want to ask you, Bob Sanders, about another business story that caught our attention this week. New New Hampshire unemployment numbers came out on Wednesday, measuring the month of January. What did we find out, Bob?
Went below 5%, 4.9 to be exact. It's kind of like we've been waiting for this for a while. It's kind of like we're waiting for the spring and it's waiting for the economy to thaw. And it's actually the economy is happening, thawing faster than this winter is. We've had other signs going on. We had the foreclosures has fell by a third compared to last year. Even during this winter, the prices of real estate went up. Home, even though there were less sales for obvious reasons, but
sure,
people were
who
spending
wants to go out in a
money.
Blizzard and look at houses?
You know, there's all sorts of bankruptcies going down. We had under 200 for the first time in February. I'm not sure. This is a general thing. I mean, there's no big thing. I mean, we have some companies doing very well, like GT Solar or Ruger makes guns. GT Solar has a big deal with Apple, and we've been following those, but those jobs are out of the state. Their companies are here, but they're building elsewhere. It's not like we can point to any particular thing of where these jobs are coming
from. Sure,
I
was going to ask you that. Yeah, so it's not any one big thing.
Yeah, and this is the unemployment it kind of fits in with it's going to go in front of the House next week or the week after. But the committee voted basically for people on unemployment. This is the House Labor Committee, to get a raise. It's a small raise, but they haven't had one in years. And the reason they're getting the raise is because the unemployment has been down so much that our unemployment fund is healthy. And not only are they getting a raise, but the employers are getting a cut in their unemployment taxes.
All right, so there's some good news on the economy there. Dean Spiliotis.
Yeah, the federal government's also going to release its unemployment numbers today as well, and there's some speculation that it might drop to 6.5%. I think it's at around 6.7% now. But there is some disappointment at the federal level that they don't seem to be able to crack the 200,000 job increase per month threshold, which is sort of what they're shooting for a thriving economy. What's been interesting to me is the kind of a new political dimension emerging on this, where the Obama administration has consistently pointed to the weather as a potential explanation for why the job numbers are not as good as they might be, the severe weather. So, every time I listen to sort of talk radio, conservatives are kind of mocking the administration for, always having it's all about the weather now that's creating the problems, not the economic policy. So I think you're going to see a little politicization of the whole employment issue. Democrats are going to say it's about a living wage, and Republicans are going to say it's a Democratic big government policy. So it's kind of interesting to put these numbers are moving in the right direction, but there is a larger political debate around these numbers, much in the same way there is pretty much around every policy issue these days. So it's just been interesting to hear this whole weather issue become politicized.
Well, it's that whole wage inequality theme, though,
sure.
Right, Gary,
oh,
too,
absolutely.
That we're hearing from Democrats here in New Hampshire
right.
And nationally.
This whole push to up the minimum wage to $10.10. I mean, it's this whole – we're trying to brand ourselves as the people – as the party for the little people, the working class and the other party is the other way, and they don't care about the working class. So it's very politicized at this point, that's for sure.
Bob?
Well, and talking about the minimum wage, there's the House has passed – not the House has passed. The House is getting a bill to raise it up to $9 an hour here, and that's going to be next week. That was passed the House committee. There's also a lot of other labor legislation I maybe could talk about later.
Well, and the national unemployment numbers did come out at about 8:30 this morning. That's when the Bureau of Labor Statistics releases them, the first Friday of every month. They said that the economy added 175 jobs last month and that the unemployment rate was up slightly to 6.7%. So those are the national numbers, 6.7% compared to 4.9% in New Hampshire. Just real quickly, Bob Sanders, to you on the minimum wage, since you mentioned it. Now, I understand that President Obama came to New England this week earlier to Connecticut to highlight his push for states to raise their own state minimum wages, given that there won't be any action on this at the federal level. And Governor Hassan declined to attend.
Yes, is it, you know, tea leave time? Is it she's avoiding Obama because of Obamacare, or especially on the minimum wage issue, which she is a strong supporter? Or is he have a scheduling problem? I just think when the president of the United States comes to town, you show up and unless you have a problem with the president of the United States.
Dean, you're our political guy. What do you
sure.
think?
Sure. It's a time-honored tradition of avoiding a incumbent when his poll incumbent president when his poll numbers are dropping. And I think Obama is seeing some of the lowest numbers of his presidency in recent months. As Bob mentioned, Governor Hassan has been a supporter of minimum wage legislation. I think that the bill you mentioned to sort of start at 9 and then bump it up a year later, I think she generally supports that, she's kind of hedged a little bit, but I think she conceptually is in favor of that. She apparently on her schedule there was an 11 a.m. New Hampshire Food Bank program that she was going to attend. But other than that, there was apparently no conflict with this 2 p.m. So, perhaps. But, we can go back to, Bill Clinton when he was down and out early in his presidency and Democrats avoided him. So, this is sort of if it was political, it's not that unusual to do something like this. But it was noticed in New England where there are a number of Democratic governors.
OK. And again, 175,000 jobs added last month. Unemployment up slightly to 6.7%. I might have said 175 early, left off the 1,000. That's a pretty key difference. The number for you to join us this hour on our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, whether it's the unemployment numbers, the full Senate approving Medicaid expansion, the cell phone bill that we've talked about, you can join us with your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. All one word. And I did want to ask all of you about a big political story that happened earlier this week. Gary, I'll start with you. Former U.S. Senator and Congressman from New Hampshire, Bob Smith, is giving it another go. He wants to return to the U.S. Senate, represent the Granite State. Gary, for people who may not remember Senator Smith, because it's been about a decade or more since he was in office.
12 years since he's been here.
Just remind us of his political background.
Well, he was a teacher from Tuftonboro, New Hampshire. And he said he was inspired by Ronald Reagan, and he ended up winning a highly contested race for Congress. And he served in Congress, I think, for 8 terms, I think, or maybe more. But and then he ran for Senate and won one term in the Senate. And he ran a second time, and he ran a second term in the Senate. And then he started running into problems. He decided he made a big speech on the floor lambasting the Republican Party, and he left for a while to run for president. And then he was primaried by Johnny Sununu, where he lost a very hotly contested race. And since that time, he's been mostly in Florida selling real estate. But while he was in Florida, he was also a couple of times thinking about running for the Senate again.
So a long career representing New Hampshire and the U.S. House.
Always known as very conservative, kind of a man who spoke his mind. He didn't really care what he said sometimes. And
with a maverick, a conservative, but with a maverick reputation.
Got himself into trouble sometimes with what he said.
And when he made his announcement official this week, Dean Spiliotis, you got a sit-down with Senator Smith after his announcement. What did he say?
Yes, I had an opportunity to talk with Senator Smith after the event. And, what was of interest to me was because he has been kind of out of the spotlight here for over 10 years at this point. And as we've discussed, the kind of the sort of the demographics of the state and the politics of the state have changed in that period somewhat. And so I was interested to see whether, you know, he was sort of rebooting in some sort of new version of Bob Smith, or it was going to be old school. And it was pretty old school. I mean, he is coming in. He's very consistent with his message back when he had his two terms in the Senate. You know, he's anti-Washington, kind of a little bit of the outsider maverick flavor that you mentioned, lower taxes, lower spending, repeal Obamacare. End entitlements. He does not support any even a floor on a minimum wage. I asked him about that. So no minimum wage at all. Stop illegal immigration, et cetera, et cetera. So very conservative.
Anything that surprised you, Dean, from this long conversation? I
guess what surprised me is that, you know, he's sort of bringing back kind of, you know, the same message he had over 10 years ago, and the state has changed. You know, what was interesting to me is he still gets most animated when you ask him about things like abortion and birth control and gay marriage and those sorts of issues. He has very strong, he believes he has strong principles that he adheres to. You know, I think Democrats are going to bait him on that because that's the kind of stuff that will help to defeat him, I think. But he's going to try to focus on, if he gets the nomination, he's going to focus on the economy and foreign policy. He was very gracious about Jean Shaheen. He had some very nice things to say about her. He said, this is not about her. It's about the larger breakdown of the system in Washington. So he seems game. I mean, he seems like he's in. But I'm not sure how well his message is going to resonate at this point.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Dean. You said if he gets the nomination, how big an if is that?
Depends on what Scott Brown does. You know, I think if Scott Brown gets in, regardless of whatever might happen in the general election, I think, you know, Brown would have probably a better chance. Who knows at this point? We have not heard a lot from Karen Testerman. Jim Rubens is also, making a race of it. I think we'll get a better sense before the primary when we have some debates and you can kind of size them all up. There are sort of mixed feelings about him in the Republican Party. Some people are behind him. Some people are not so happy to see him back. There's a lot of kind of baggage. And he, in fairness, said, if people have an issue with me, that's their prerogative.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned some of those other names, Dean, because on Monday on The Exchange, we'll be talking more about this U.S. Senate race and the two congressional races. We're going to spend the whole hour Monday looking ahead to the 2014 midterm election. So more on that on Monday. Right now, though, we're taking your questions and comments on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. All one word. Jonathan's joining us from North Conway. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead.
How are you today?
Good.
This is a comment on minimum wage increase. My wife and I own a restaurant in the Mount Washington Valley, and the only incentive we can get new hires to jump on board with is paying above minimum wage. We can't do 401s or any of that. So we've never been a minimum wage hire. We have employees that have been with us for 3 years now that are making 10, 15 hours. And that's, you know, they're entry level positions. If there is a minimum wage increase, it devalidates and devalues their time with us. So to keep competitive in that market, I would have to increase their salary exponentially, which would then, devalue my sous chef and my line cooks.
So if the minimum wage goes up, Jonathan, you have to kind of bump everybody up from the levels that you're currently paying? Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Yeah.
Just to show them value for their time with us. We currently employ 25 people, and I honestly don't think our company could support a $100,000 payroll increase.
Jonathan, thanks a lot for calling in. Good to hear your personal thoughts on this since you're a business owner. And Bob Sanders, I'm going to turn to you. I wonder what you're hearing from businesses when it comes to the prospect of raising the minimum wage. Now, this is nowhere near a done deal. It's just something people are talking about.
Most businesses don't like it. A business and industry association, which is the biggest organization, they have opposed it. But there is an argument on the other side of that and a business argument on the other side of it. And it goes as that basically if he has to raise his wages, everybody else will have to raise their wages. And if everybody else is raising their wages, everybody's making more wages. And if they have more money in their pocket, they may be able to afford the hotel. So that's the counter argument. It's probably a minority argument in the business community. But when they took it, when they look at studies of different states that have raised the minimum wage, they have not seen employment going down. So maybe there's some sense to it.
Well, Jonathan, it's good to hear from you. And Gary Rayner, I want to ask you about another important vote earlier this week in the House. This is a House committee voting to reject a casino bill, 11-9, so pretty close vote. Mm-hmm. Which casino bill was it, Gary? Because there have been a few floating around this year.
There were like four or five floating around this year. This was the big bill. This was the bill that was developed by the Gambling Regulatory Oversight Committee. Spent all summer and into the fall developing it. Very complex bill, very complex regulatory system that they had set up in this bill. And Governor Maggie Hassan has invested a lot of time in this bill. And I wouldn't say that the vote was that surprising because that committee is led by two people who are very anti-gaming. So having it closed is probably kind of a victory that they can take it to the floor and say, the committee had a hard time deciding which way to go.
Well, and that's an important point, too, that you're raising, Gary, that unlike the U.S. Congress, a committee vote in the legislature doesn't mean that the full House is also going to vote no. Committees aren't as powerful here.
No, they're not. I mean, it's just a recommendation here, essentially. And so the full House can do whatever they want, basically.
Yeah, and what do you think they're going to do?
I think it's going to be about as close as the vote was in the committee. It's a very tight vote. I think it's going to be very close, one way or the other.
Well, and the full Senate this week, Bob Sanders, approved a 4-cent increase in the gas tax, a one-time increase, not tied to inflation, as the bill's sponsor, Republican Jim Rausch, had wanted. What changed his mind, Bob?
Well, he didn't. I mean, business community, for one thing, came out actually for the gas tax if you don't index it to inflation in the future. I think also nobody wanted to commit themselves to an automatic raise in the gas tax. But the truth is that the roads are especially if you go out this spring, are going to be in bad shape. They're running out of salt. And infrastructure, we have bad marks for our infrastructure. When people come to rate New Hampshire, we're on the bottom rung in terms of that. And businesses need to move things. They need to move materials.
Well, I went over some pretty big frost heaves myself yesterday, including one that made me go up in my seat and almost hit my head on the roof. But we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later. I was belted. That's the thing. Coming up, we're going to talk about more trouble this week for the Fred Fuller Oil Company and some customers feeling again left out in the cold. Are you among them? Let us know. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We'll hear from you coming up. This is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, the White House releases its $4 trillion budget for 2015. Then, the U.S. orders sanctions following Russia's actions in Crimea, and protests in Venezuela mark the anniversary of former President Chavez's death. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from People's United Bank, serving individuals and businesses throughout the Northeast for over 170 years in branches and online, peoples.com. And from the Colonial Theater in Keene, presenting The Chieftains in an early celebration of St. Patrick's Day on Tuesday, March 11th at 7:30. Tickets and information at thecolonial.org. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Monday in The Exchange, an early bird check-in with New Hampshire's midterm congressional races. Join us for that conversation Monday on The Exchange. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and you can join us now with your questions and comments on some of the stories that we're covering this hour, among them a proposal to raise the minimum wage, a vote to expand Medicaid in the state Senate, and in the state House, a bill to ban the use of handheld cell phones while behind the wheel. Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Bob Sanders, Gary Reno, Dean Spiliotis, let's go right back to our callers. And Jim's joining us from Amherst. Hi, Jim, you're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, I want to talk about Fred Fuller, the PR debacle that's going on once again. And he talks about his phone lines being down, and that's the issue with not delivering to pre-buy customers. Now, for the record, I'm not a Fred Fuller customer, but I have friends and family who are, so it's really making the hair in the back of my neck stand up. I know that my fuel comes just magically without me ever calling for over 30 years from the company I deal with. So it just doesn't hold any water. And then he goes on to say, but we're taking care of our pre-buy customers first and foremost. Then you see some quotes in the media from the pre-buy customers, and they're saying we're getting 50, 75 gallons, while the people who are COD,
cash on delivery, yeah.
Yeah, they're getting full fill-ups. Well, it looks like it's a cash flow issue. And the other thing he was saying back in January was supplies tight. Well, they went to the Oil Dealers Association that has huge barges coming into Portsmouth. They said there's no supply issues. We get plenty of supply. So
it's a distribution problem or something like that, Jim.
Yeah, he's blaming the weather. Well, the weather's tough on all the oil companies, and he's the only one who's not delivering.
Well, Jim, let's follow up on this story. And first of all, to you, Bob, just for the particulars, and then I want to ask you about the PR problem, Dean Spiliotis, that our caller mentions. But, Bob, what's going on again at Fred Fuller? This is the state's largest supplier of heating oil, so it's a big story.
Well, I don't know exactly what's going on at Fred Fuller because I don't have my eyes on their books, but I kind of have the same suspicions as the caller that they're just out of cash. This has happened before with other oil companies, and so this is a refrain that we've been having. There's been some legislation to address this. And it is faltered. It was going to go down in flames before Fred Fuller, and now it's been revised again. The bill would basically say that oil dealers, if they want to do pre-buy, you got to have cash in the bank or a letter of credit to cover it. And the oil dealers say, well, we won't be able to offer pre-buy then. And so that's been a big issue, and the legislature just hasn't had the will, I guess you say, to do this. There are arguments against it, and I can go into them, but I think some other people might want to chip in.
Well, and it is interesting. He talks about blaming it on phone problems, but my understanding is the same as Jim's, Dean, that when you pre-buy, and it just comes. You shouldn't have to call for it.
Right, and I think there's been enough anecdotal evidence prior to the phone issue being revived as an explanation to suggest that they're just not able to make their deliveries. You know, people who are calling are being told it's going to be a week, maybe 10 days or more, and then they're getting smaller than usual deliveries. You know, the Fuller Company, which, as you mentioned, has about 30% of New Hampshire's market, which is a little under 250,000 customers. They're known for being aggressive in their pre-buy contracts. They tend to do it earlier than the other companies. They tend to do it at a lower price. It brings in more money up front. But as we've heard anecdotally, I use a different company. I have friends who use other companies for mine. None of us have had any trouble at all with the auto delivery or pre-buys or any of that stuff. So this is clearly something specific, I think, to, as everyone else says, their cash flow. We'll see how they bounce back from this. I think this is the kind of thing that really spooks people, particularly senior citizens. It causes tremendous anxiety because you have to worry about pipes freezing. You know, say you have a home, some home somewhere where, you're concerned about the pipes freezing and you don't have easy access to alternative sources of fuel or a generator. It causes a lot of anxiety, and there are other risks associated with it in terms of health and homeowner damage. They're probably going to lose a lot. I think once you get through it, you can probably rebound. Having this happen again, a second time like this, I think it's going to be tremendously damaging for their bottom, for their long-term business. I think people are going to flee after this.
Yeah, because we did see this in January, and the AG's office
got involved.
Yeah,
seems to be the same thing all over again, right?
And so forth. Yep. Well, I did want to ask you, Gary, about another bill in the State House that came close this week, close but not quite close enough. This is a bill that stems from a longtime effort by Republican Representative David Hess, almost made it out of the full House this week, aimed at getting some nonprofits, Gary, to pay business taxes. Some nonprofits, not all. Who's this about and who isn't it about?
Well, it's basically about hospitals and private universities. He's saying these are some of the largest employers in the state. These are some of the people who are making some of the most money, the people who had these organizations. They're all nonprofits. They're all not paying any business taxes in the state. It's sort of reminiscent of the argument we heard back about 20 years when we had just the business profits tax. And there was talk then now we really need to broaden the tax base, and we came up with the business enterprise tax.
So like law firms that don't necessarily generate a profit,
but and so on, architects and so on weren't paying any taxes.
So they're covered by the BET now.
So we put in the BET, which is largely a value-added tax, although people don't like to call it that, but that's what it really is. And now people have found ways to avoid that. So what we're talking about is trying to find a way to broaden the base again. So we want to bring in these nonprofits.
So Representative Hess is right. These are some huge employers. I'm not saying he's right or wrong about the tax issue, but these are big organizations. If they're not companies, they're organizations.
I mean, look at the Dartmouth-Hitchcock or Elliott Hospital or Southern New Hampshire University or Dartmouth College. I mean, they're large, large employers in their areas. And they employ a lot of people, and they pay very good salaries.
So what's the argument against them paying taxes? What was the pushback? Because this bill did not make it out of the House.
No, he sort of stepped back and tried to turn it into a study committee, but they were having none of that. The pushback is you're also – the way he had it was you had to do $2 million worth of business essentially. And the pushback was, well, you're going to catch up an awful lot of other people here, a lot of – very sort of marginal nonprofits, particularly in the health and human services world. And those people can't afford to be paying this tax.
Could he just have bumped up the revenue? You know, you have to have $5 million or $10 million.
I think that would be a way to around that. And even if the other problem is you're also sort of like singling out people.
Sure.
And yet that's because we have what the Constitution says in New Hampshire has to be proportional and equal. It's kind of hard to get around that.
Yeah, and the hospitals, I'm sure, made the argument, Bob Sanders, that they do make payments. I think Dartmouth makes a payment in lieu of taxes to the city of Lebanon, and also that they offer a fair bit of charity care. And so they're kind of giving back in that way.
Yes, I mean, the hospitals, and they're not exactly powerful because they've been losing in a lot of battles, but they are a force. But in addition, they're making the argument that they're having a lot of problems right now because of other legislation like the Medicare enhancement tax and so forth, that and cutbacks in federal health care and so forth, that the hospitals are having trouble surviving, and I mean smaller ones particularly. And the bigger, and again, if you just single out the bigger ones, then you get into that constitutional problem.
All right. Well, another story that we'll probably be following up later. Let's take another call if we could. Again, the number here in the exchange for you to join us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Roger's been waiting in Ware. Hi, Roger. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I've been listening to your show this morning on minimum wage. I have another scenario that I'm seeing. Corporations and companies today that do pay a very good wages, in order to increase their profits, are trying to lower their wages, and how they're going about this is hiring temps. They hire a temp with less hourly rate, no benefits. And it's very hard in the state of New Hampshire right now to get a full-time job without being a temp for lower wages and no benefits. And I'll let it go at that and see what your guests say.
Well, Roger, thanks a lot for calling. And Bob, I know you've been covering this. And Dean, we were talking earlier about the heavy use of adjuncts at the state's universities as well. But go ahead, Bob, you first and then Dean.
Yeah, we just did a story about the Temporary Workers Bill of Rights, not Bill of Rights, Temporary Worker Right Bill, that the House is going to go up for the House. A committee endorsed it last week. The temp workers are growing. That's, and the question is how fast, and they are growing. There was a huge outcry by the temp industry, and there is one about the regulation, and I'm sure they're going to weigh in on the House about that. One of the things is that people don't know is that the temps do temp agencies do, they're their employees, and they do have to play on unemployment compensation, workers' comp, and other things. It's not like there's none of these payroll things, but they do generally don't have to pay health insurance. Now, Obamacare might change all that.
Dean?
Yes, and you know, we're talking about the increasing use of adjuncts and other sorts of part-time instructors in academia, especially as we move towards a lot of these online programs. And we've heard this debate in the context of Obamacare. There's some concern that the way institutions will deal with the cost of providing benefits is to kind of have more people doing less work or have temps or shorter number of work hours. It's kind of a complex set of issues that all sort of revolves around cost and kind of the trade-offs between having to provide benefits versus the cost to employers.
Yeah. Well, Roger, thanks for the call. And it's good to hear about that story that you're covering, Bob, in relation to this. That's one of those less covered stories that I didn't hear about. Thanks, Roger. Here's a comment from Heidi on Facebook, and she's talking about a story that I did want to cover with you, gentlemen. This is the U.S. Navy's effort, for the third time, to get someone to redevelop the long-closed Portsmouth Naval Shipyard prison, shuttered for 40 years and in enormous disrepair. Heidi on Facebook says, I've always thought it would be a perfect site for a high-end hotel and event center. It is on a gorgeous piece of property. The building is striking, too, albeit crumbling. Heidi, I agree with you. The property is amazing. The building is striking. We've put a picture of the former Navy prison on our Facebook page. Check it out. Gary, it's pretty incredible.
It is. It's an incredible building. And you look across the water, it's just amazing. It's probably one of the most beautiful spots on the seacoast. And the problem, it would make a wonderful hotel and an event center, but the problem is it's right next to a military base that has nuclear submarines at it. And so since 9/11, something like that's almost impossible.
Well, what do you mean, Gary?
Well, with the security.
Because they want somebody to develop
it. They want somebody to develop. This is like the third attempt they've made to develop it. Back in about 2000, they had an agreement with a developer in the seacoast, Joseph Sawtell, who was also involved in developing the mills in Dover. And he and the Navy had an agreement, but then he died and the whole thing fell apart.
Yeah.
They went out again, I think, about 10 years later, and that one they never got anything that they liked. And now the Navy's going out again and seeking somebody to help come in, clean it up, have some sort of use. They want some money for it. And it's a gorgeous facility, but the security issues with the naval base next to it makes it almost impossible for something like a hotel or living or apartments or anything like that.
Wow. So what could they put there? I mean, that seems like the obvious use because it's so waterfront and gorgeous and so forth.
Some sort of business activity probably is what you're talking about. That's about the only thing you could probably use it for.
Wow. Dean, there's also just structural issues with the building itself, asbestos, lead paint, all those things that developers ooh.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's pretty overgrown. It is 106 years old. And they're looking for, I think they said they're offering somebody like up to a 50-year lease, maybe some sort of commercial development for different types of businesses. But yeah, the problem is that it's located on an active naval base that deals with nuclear subs, and that raises a whole host of security issues for how you might use it.
Well, thanks again for the Facebook comment, Heidi. And again, we put a picture of the Naval Prison on our Facebook page. Check it out there. It's NHPR Exchange, all one word. I want to spend a few minutes with you folks at the end of the program finding out what you may be covering next week. But before we do, I did want to close out with a huge congratulations to UNH alum Jennifer Lee. Won an Oscar on Sunday. She co-directed and wrote the hit movie Frozen, which won for Best Animated Film. Gary, I'm guessing the university's pretty excited about this. You're a UNH alum, aren't you?
I am. The university's excited about that and a number of other things recently. They've been on a roll a little bit. And it's amazing because, I remember this is many years ago, when I was there, they always used to say, well, what's your major? And I'd say English literature. And they'd say, well, good luck finding a job.
Oh, they said that?
Oh, back then, yes.
I don't want to say many years ago, but some years ago. Really? Well, see, that's a thing. They say that now, too. They say you better get a STEM degree or you're out of luck. And here she is.
Here she is. She's won an Oscar, So, I haven't seen the movie, but everything I've heard says it's a wonderful movie. And that she was like one of the first women that Disney Disney Studios trusted to actually develop one of their animated films.
Well, and as someone at the university said, we're proud that she's a wildcat. So good for her, Jennifer Lee. What are you going to be looking at next week, Bob Sanders?
Well, as you can tell from some of this show, we've been really following what's been going on in labor legislation. When times get better, labor gets more on the offensive and as opposed to defensive. That's why the big push for the minimum wage. We've had things from everything from breastfeeding on the job, people being able to do that in private.
Businesses having to carve out a special place for that. Yeah.
There's next week a paycheck equity bill is going to go in front of the Senate with a committee endorsement with Republicans behind this, basically saying that you can disclose what you're making. That the employer can't prevent you from disclosing what you're making to the other workers. Credit history, not being able to use credit history in terms of employment. So there's a little – and this is backed by Republicans. So there is a little change in terms of that.
Lots of labor legislation then percolating just below the surface. Gary Reno, how about you?
We have the Medicaid public hearing in the House on Monday. House and Senate are in both next week. We're toward the end of the – running toward crossover where all the bills have to go across. So we're having a lot of House and Senate sessions where they have to act on all kinds of bills.
That's a really good point. Yeah, towards the middle end of March, the House and Senate have to exchange bills. So, right.
It gets crazy about this time of year.
Sure. Dean, how about you?
Yes, we are getting close to crossover day, so we're going to kind of track all these pieces of legislation we've been talking about. Also interested to see if there's any movement in the Senate race. You know, Bob Smith getting in. There's a new Suffolk University poll that shows Gene Shaheen in better shape against Scott Brown than maybe we thought. But that is only one poll. So I'm interested to see if there's any kind of reset or change in strategy among advocacy groups, et cetera, over the next week or two.
Okay. Great to talk to all of you guys. Thank you so much for being here.
Great to be here, Nora.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHBR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with an early bird preview of the 2014 midterm elections for U.S. House and Senate. Next, another look at childhood obesity. After years of expanding rates, there's some good news about the status of the youngest kids. And we catch up with our sky guys after a recent close call with an asteroid and a jackpot of extrasolar planets. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us all next week for The Exchange. Every morning, live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show and the Friday News Roundup next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where we get support from you, our listeners, and from Plymouth State University, offering graduate courses in Plymouth and Concord to meet the needs of working professionals throughout the state. Plymouth.edu/graduate. And Centrix Bank, see beyond with Centrix Bank, customized business banking for businesses, professionals, municipalities, and not-for-profit organizations, online at centrixbank.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nashua 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It is 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Tom Gelton of NPR, sitting in for Diane Rehm. The Labor Department says the U.S. economy added 175,000 jobs in February, beating expectations. The House of Representatives approves a $1 billion loan package for Ukraine, but the political fallout from that crisis continues. The White House says consumers